Welcome to the 200th episode of Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Secularization, globalization, democratization, these are words that get bandied about a lot. We're told that these are the trends that are driving the grand narrative of the modern world. But the reality is maybe not so straightforward. For example, if you look at the percentage of the world's population who are agnostic, in 1970, it was 15%. Now, it's 4.5%. For atheists, in 1970, they were 10% of the population. In 2010, only 2% of people worldwide identified with atheism.
And according to a recent study, by the year 2050, the number of people in the world without any religious affiliation will decline as a share of the global population. So while Islam will grow faster than any other world religion, Muslims and Christians are on track to make up nearly equal shares of the world's population in just a few decades.
To unpack these maybe unexpected realities of today's and tomorrow's world, we're speaking with Dutch philosopher Evert-Jan Ouwenil. He's an advisor to World Vision and can also be found in theatres at home in the Netherlands, summarising world history in one evening.
So, Evert, it's a great pleasure to have you in. Thanks for coming.
Great being here.
Now, firstly, I just have to ask you to begin with, how do you go about summarising world history in one evening? This must be a long evening.
Well, it's all under the motto, it's impossible, so let's give it a shot. You know, we get lost in details in our societies. We really have so much that we could get lost in, so many, such an incredible amount of information. The same with history. You can have big, thick books around so many topics. So who's the one having this kind of an abundance of courage, or let's say arrogance, to actually skip the details and get to the main lines, like the chain reactions, the logics behind all these details? And that's what I try to do in one evening or one day or 20 hours, whatever you want. I try to skip the details and really make you give you the impression that you have an overview, that you once in your lifetime, you had this one evening where you would see it all, the 5,000 years.
So thinking about the big picture, really ever since the Enlightenment of the 18th century, people have been kind of heralding the decline and presumably eventually the death of religion. But you say that actually the opposite is happening.
It's not me. It's the Pew Forum, P-E-W. And they're actually giving these stunning statistics that right now 84% of the world is religious and they expect it to rise to 87% in 2050. Now, if you ask why, I would simply say it's a matter of demographics. So it's not like we have a huge amount of conversions. The atheists and the agnostics will not feel lonely because there will be 100 million more of them. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of billion more people that will grow up in religious areas and will most likely be religious.
So this is different in different parts of the world, presumably. The pattern is not
absolutely
uniform.
So we may not even notice it a lot in our part of the world. I mean, Australia and the Netherlands. But even though there will be a change, I think a demographic change in our countries too, we will have a more prominent role of religion, I think, because of new people entering our countries. But not as much as in other parts of the world. We may still have quite a secular society also in the coming decades.
And when you say that it's demographic, is that kind of a polite way of saying that religious people have more babies?
Yep. Okay. that's the short version. They multiply slightly more, abundantly than the secular people.
Evert, if we think of specifically now about Christianity in the world, maybe the world overall is becoming more religious, but is Christianity in decline?
It's not shrinking. It's still growing. The big question is, in 2050, will Islam be the biggest or will Christianity be the biggest? The answer might lay in China.
Because the Christian church in China is growing.
Yeah, and so if it grows in the same rate next decades, then you will have the biggest being Christianity. But if it slows down, the Islam might take over. Because they're both around one-third of the world population.
Is it also true that in some of the old world, Europe and so on, Christianity is declining, but it's not the case in parts of Africa, Asia, Latin America.
It's a very local event that people think that secularization will take over in society. Very local. Of course, you will see pockets of secular communities in Sao Paulo, in Nairobi in the future, where there will be people not going to church, perhaps even losing their faith, but they will not be the majority. That's highly unlikely.
You're quite an advocate for faith literacy. You think that even if people aren't religious themselves, that it's important that they can understand a bit about religion and its place in people's lives. Why is that?
It applies to everyone, to be clear. It doesn't. It's not like you're not religious and you need to understand the religious. Now, even if you are religious, if you are a Christian, I would encourage you to understand Islam. Suppose you would not be a Christian or a Muslim and you live in 2050 and two-thirds of the world will be Christian or Muslim. You will be a stranger on the planet if you don't understand the Christian faith or the Muslim faith. And right now, 84% of the world is religious, adheres to a particular religion, meaning that if you don't understand religion whatsoever, if you have no affinity at all with religion, you will be, again, already now a stranger on the planet.
So you think that faith illiteracy, is that quite common? Is that quite widespread? I feel like people think they understand religion.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's the whole problem. They think they understand. They have assumptions about the other religion or about a particular spirituality, and they settle for their own assumptions. I think right now these assumptions in a lot of cases don't help. For example, if you see on the news only the violent expressions of religion, you have a very quick judgment, of course. It's very easy to think that religion is a cause of violence. But hey, that's what gets on the news. That's not what the average religious person may be about. So really to pass beyond the obvious assumptions that you might pick up based on the news, it's really important that we move on and that we really have an idea of what is that average Syrian refugee entering Europe, for example. I'm talking about my own continent there. Do we associate them with the risk of having a few terrorists among them? Or do we associate them with just an average family just trying to have a living on Earth?
So how do people move past those kind of initial impressions and stereotypes?
Yeah, so there are going to be lots of studies of religion classes bursting at the seams.
Yeah, so two different things. First, you have the theory, and I don't think that will be as compelling as seeing faces and meeting people. So I would highly encourage that we add faces to religion, that we tell stories of people, that we highlight, that we lift out these individual families that enter our countries. Just give them a name, give them a face, let them talk about their aspirations, and you will see they're probably, these aspirations are not about world dominance of a particular religion. They're just simply about having a house, having a family, having education for the kids. All these simple things in life will probably be the most important for the average religious person. That's very big eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people these days, because that's not what you hear in the news.
You're listening to Life and Faith. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the state of the world today, just a small topic, with Dutch philosopher Evert Jan Ouweneel.
So the world is becoming increasingly religious, but it's also increasingly anxious. So you've described the current political and economic and social climate as a kind of perfect storm, which doesn't sound good. What does that mean?
Yeah, we're definitely in a perfect storm. The world is facing many different things that can make us afraid. And fascinatingly, they're all happening at the same time. Let me just give you a few things that are happening right now, and they're all at the same time, and they're all in themselves already reasons for a lot of anxiety. We have a huge power shift in the world, of course, with the rising economies, China first. Big thing for especially the West, we don't control the world anymore. There are new powers. And can you imagine, the World Bank is predicting that in 2050, there will not be a single European economy anymore, be part of the G8. You know, G8, no European country in it. Can you imagine 100 years ago, France and Britain occupied half of the planet? And soon there will not be anyone at the table. Second one, the second largest or the second most powerful country in the world has an authoritarian regime and gets away with it. Again, reasons for anxiety, especially in the West, we don't control the political language of right and wrong anymore. Third one, for the first time in history, the whole world needs to cooperate to get the planet in order. We never had this before, that 7 billion people will have to cooperate to tackle all these issues that don't care about borders. The biggest issues right now don't care about borders. That's the fascinating thing. If you talk about hackers, terrorists, climate change, refugee and migrant streams, pandemics, water shortage, nuclear risks, human traffic and slavery, all of these issues don't care about borders. If you want to solve them, you will have to cooperate with everyone in the world. If you skip one country, all the hackers will be there, or all the terrorists will be there. You have to work with everyone together. And then we also have the fourth one, and that is national politics has become impossible. we see that more and more issues in today's world are international issues. And so the well-being and the wealth of nations are more and more determined by the well-being of the whole planet. If things go wrong on the other side of the planet, your country can pay the price for it. We only have national politics right now. So everything that goes right and wrong will be on the account of the national leaders. But at the same time, most of the issues that determine the well-being of a country are not international, are not national issues, but are internationally determined. So what you see is a weird situation where we have national politics being somehow accountable for what is going right and wrong in the country, whereas more and more issues are actually internationally determined. What you see right now is populists basically filling the void. They're just pretending that all these issues can be solved on a national level. Just close the curtain and whatever. Just pretend the rest of the world doesn't exist. Solve your own issues. But you can't solve hackers, terrorists, pandemics, etc. on your own. But the populists still pretend and they get away with it because people wish to believe it.
I'm starting to feel anxious listening to that. but I wonder, are there any reasons to feel less pessimistic?
I think right now I can't predict whether things will move in a positive or a negative direction. I think a lot depends on our mindset. Are we willing to invest in understanding the planet? Are we willing to think on a global level? Or are we so afraid and so much into a kind of biological self-protection mechanism that we want to close the curtains and just, you know, defend self-interest as much as we can and just pretend the rest of the world doesn't exist? To what extent do we want to invest in global citizenship and really embrace the idea that the future of the planet depends on the cooperation of all nations and not on the, you know, the few nations being rich and powerful enough to have it their way and have the upper hand at the cost of the rest? The planet can't cope with that anymore, with just having a few empires winning all the time. Hackers and terrorists and pandemics, they don't care about empires and winners and losers. They will just go wherever their opportunity is. So we have to cooperate, and it requires a new mindset. We have to think bigger. Now, we're not the biggest planet in the universe. We have to be able to simply think for the sake of the entire Earth. We can cope with that. So I would say I'm getting optimistic when I see that we start investing in global citizenship.
Do you think that the Christian worldview has anything particular to offer in terms of weathering this perfect storm?
I think in terms of resilience, yes. I think the Christian faith has two ways of coping with stress. On the one hand, we can see at the end of the day, it's not our kingdom. We're not building our own empire here. We are trying to cooperate with Christ and trying to allow him to be in control. Now, that's a highly spiritual thought, but the big benefit of that thought is that you will not be the dictator of the earth. So that's good news for the rest of the world. And our job on earth is to be servants and to do our share in trying to cope with the issues. And at the same time, we are able to hand over if we can't solve it for the full 100%. I think the beauty about the Christian faith is there's a plan B when you can't solve it all. And that is that it's not your earth anyway. You can pass it on to the one being really in control. The whole Bible is about us trying to be a positive difference in the world. But the Bible is realistic enough that even if we try to be as beautiful as we can be, that will probably not solve all the issues of the earth. So big thought, but we're not the only ones. There are 2 billion people thinking that. It's a belief. We can't impose it on anyone. It's a belief, but it can really make us resilient because we're not the only ones caring for the restoration of the earth. We're not the only ones caring for peace on earth.
Well, Evett, thank you so much. It's been a scary but fascinating conversation. So thank you very much for joining us.
Big pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart. We hope you've enjoyed this episode on a religious world. For more conversations like this, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. Next week, we celebrate Reconciliation Week and think about what reconciliation looks like in Australia. I hope you join us then.